Welcome to the Electrify News Podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo, America's largest e-mobility festival coming to five major cities in 2022.
Welcome back to the Electrify News Podcast. I'm Matt Teske, always here with the delectable Joe Boris. Sorry, man, I had to throw that in.
It's fine. I knew it was going to go off the rails. I just didn't realize it was going to start 16 feet off the rails
in a nanosecond. Like, there's no rails here. Like, what's going on?
Where we're going, we don't need rails.
Don't need rails.
So, speaking of where we're going, I just got back from the ACT Expo in Long Beach, California. That's like alternative clean transport or like alternative commercial trucking or something like that. But at the end of the day, it's the biggest clean commercial equipment show in North America, right? Whether it's a big forklift or a big tractor or a backhoe or a semi truck, if it's electrified, if it's zero emissions, it's there at this show. And it was actually a good show. It was at the Long Beach Convention Center. They had like, I think the day I was there, they had 8,500 people, which is...
I was going to say, like, yeah, I've been to the convention there in Long Beach. And from what I saw and read on social media and people posting, you know, that are in the industry, it was a well-attended event. It's the first kind of major industry-focused EV-ish, you know, business end of conference type of thing that we've had in 2 years, really.
Yeah, I mean, they had one in 2021, but I think everybody was still a little bit gun shy with it.
Yeah.
And there wasn't as much there. So the landscape has really changed. So California has a couple of rebate initiatives now that were not in place 2 years ago that are up to $100,000 per vehicle. So which sounds astronomical, but like if you're buying a giant over the road semi, $100,000. It's a piece of it. That's some of it, right? Exactly. But the other component of that has been this like zero emission port initiative in California. Mm-hmm. So that's like, you know, the Port of LA, you know, up in San Francisco, all these different ports in the state of California. If you're going to have a vehicle roll onto the port, it must be zero emission, right? So then the question becomes for these fleet operators, do we just convert everything to zero emissions? Do we have two fleets where we have a battery electric truck that goes to the port, sits there, gets the stuff, takes it to a depot, transfer it to diesel, which of course is a ridiculous concept.
And I was going to say that's already got too complicated to try.
Yeah. It's already too complicated. Well, but some people are doing it because they can't get these trucks fast enough.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because if you think about what zero means in California, especially for zero emissions, it makes you think of, it's both EV, but it's also, is that where hydrogen comes into the mix genuinely?
Right? Well, I think that's where hydrogen comes into the mix for no other reason than there actually is an infrastructure in Southern California, possibly only in Southern California, for hydrogen. I mean, the hotel I was staying at, there was a gas station within walking distance. I walked by it that had a hydrogen filling station.
Yeah, there's not a lot, but to your point, California's got some. So...
And where it is at the ports.
Yeah. Well, so that's where I think there's opportunity. But we were talking about a little bit before the goat introduced us about
Billy's a great kid.
He's a great kid. But no, the idea of if you're going to go to the port, and you brought up a good point about, but then you're talking about sheer weight. If you're talking about battery electric going onto the port to meet those standards, then it's okay. So you're adding some weight with batteries. What does that then do to your actual full load you can do from a trucking perspective?
What does that do for the full load? Yeah. So they have changed their regulations a little bit where they're going to give you more GVWR. I believe it's like 2,000 or 4,000 more pounds of battery. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at, you know, like some of these Volvos, the VNL that I looked at has six battery packs and each one of them is like 140 kilowatt hours. I mean, it's a ton, and they're getting, you know, 260, 270 mile range, towing 45,000 pounds.
I say impressive because if you think about it, you're like, that is a massive amount of batteries. And from it really always boils down to efficiency. Yeah. And physics, you know, physics are always going to be there. And when you start adding that weight to get that range from the energy density of the pack, whatever the energy density might be, to get that range, the moment you start adding weight to that, it's no different than what we saw recently with even the data coming out of, you know, the F-150 Lightning and its towing capabilities. It just boils down to, if you add the weight, you got to just be prepared for what that means. So you got to add more battery to get that range back.
Yeah, you know, we're kind of going off subject here, but it was really interesting. I talked to a guy who was working with a company called Wave. You might have heard of them, but they're doing something somewhat similar to like what BMW tried to do and what Volvo tried to do in Europe with the wireless charging. Mm-hmm. But they've actually been able to get some, I believe it was like 5 or 6C, like some decent speed out of the charging. And what they're looking at doing is not necessarily putting this in parking spaces or anything like that, but at the ports where these trucks can sometimes wait for an hour and a half to 2 hours, to reduce the size of the battery, especially for a regional route where they only really need 75, 80 miles each way. Then while the truck is sitting there in drayage waiting for the container to be loaded on, it's wirelessly charging, and they can, with a relatively small patch of road, they can keep this thing on the charger the whole way through and essentially create a perpetual motion loop.
So in-road wireless, essentially?
In-road wireless, but in a with tremendously high power in a location that has the grid build out for that power level, right? For that, like, you know, 500 kilowatt infrastructure.
Well, wireless isn't going to go that high in the kilowatt rating. Now we're...
No. It's, you got to check these guys out. I don't 100% follow everything that I'm looking at there, but they're getting level three charging wireless. And I'm saying chargeway level three, not like level three,
I was going to say, let's clarify, folks, for those listening, it's entry level fast charging, chargeway level three. Well, but charge no, I mean, yeah, three. You can,
but is that, some... but how much more do you need if you're sitting there for an hour getting charged up, and then you drive 20, 25 minutes to a warehouse or a distribution center? That's all you need.
Well, we're getting into that medium heavy duty discussion about, you know, what is it that each of these vehicles actually, from a use case perspective, what is the most cost effective from a design and manufacturing perspective? And then what is the most efficient based on, then to your point, what does dwell time look like for how these vehicles are used?
What does dwell time look like?
Yeah.
And the other thing too is, you know, the other conversation that we were having, and it was, I wish I had recorded this conversation I had with the guy, because it was a really neat conversation, was we talked about the cost of putting this system in the ground.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, oh, it's astronomical, but what's the cost of one workman's comp claim if somebody trips over a cable? And especially think about it in a port, you have all these charging stations put up. He goes, every single bollard in that port has been hit by something over the last 5 years. If it's in the ground, you can't hit it.
Yeah, you can. This is the hard part about wireless, is that it's the promise of how it could be integrated is so attractive.
Yeah.
But you then have to make sure that those who are using the products alongside it, the trucks that have the ability to use it, fully understand how to take advantage of the infrastructure that is built into the ground that you can't, you know, run into. And
exactly,
I'm intrigued by wireless. Is amazing for the idea of, like, you know, parking a vehicle from a fleet side, just pulling up your parking pad and boop, you're done. Yep. Coming home, same kind of a thing. But yeah, the intricacies that happen from a day-to-day perspective, from a port and shipping, you know, like just a chaos that goes on there.
Just the chaos. Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you then, the visuals then of, like, okay, you got to stay in this track, this path, to make sure you're taking full advantage of the in-ground wireless based on if you're driving this vehicle. They'd have to really think out how to make sure that you can't goof that up. Otherwise they could spend a ton of developing it out. And then a driver who's in that chaotic, you know, day-to-day work life could very easily find themselves saying, I goofed. And then I ran out of range, or I didn't get the
charge. And then what do you do? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's a tough one from a user experience perspective.
I think the calling there, I don't know if I'm not familiar enough with the shipping container industry to speak intelligently. Right. Not that that's ever stopped me before, but still.
I saw War of the Worlds. Tom Cruise was one of those dudes who, like, moved.
Well, yeah, I know about diseases.
17 years old. Anyway, yeah, you were saying we don't know enough to be commenting on the interest.
But I do think that, like, the hot setup for that would be a city bus.
Oh, yeah. Design,
charge it overnight at the depot, and then you just go on a planned route. You have a dwell time of like 2 to 3 minutes where it just stops, charges while you're loading and unloading, and then it goes half mile, stops, charging and uncharging, and just goes. And where that little bit of boost that it gets doesn't recharge it, but it keeps it going throughout the daily duty cycle so that you don't have to think about stopping it in the middle of the day or recharging it until it just gets back to its depot.
No, that's, I mean, yeah, bus routes are the hyper low hanging fruit for that type of technology. And we need to do some digging this for a future episode where we can actually really know, okay, where is the testing on this happening? There's a lot of conversation about, you know, in ground wireless charging. And
well, they're doing school bus routes, which I think is good because they have they have a longer dwell time because they have to stop and they have to wait for the kid to sit down and all that. So that's one they're doing. And the other one they're doing that I was surprised by was autonomous agriculture.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, where the thing goes out, does its, you know, whatever plowing or whatever, comes back and parks itself over the pad.
Yep.
Because the other thing is, even if you have all these autonomous vehicles, you still kind of need somebody to walk out and plug it in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But if it's a pad, it's a pad.
It's, yeah, the hard part, it's the use case boils down to, again, it really is dwell time and designated routing. So all the examples we just gave, buses, you know, for school buses, public buses, even potentially fleet, you know, fleet operations for when they know they're going between certain hubs and you know, smaller hubs. But if it's using public highway, you then have to, we already have bus lanes, for example, like where I'm at in Portland, for example, is we have designated locations for where, you know, like we have bus lanes in downtown, bus lanes everywhere. It's like, we could take quick advantage of that type of a concept. Does the same thing exist in every city? No. You know, some buses are just in and about in traffic. So there's a lot of,
have to worry about the good cities.
Well, but there's so many places. I mean, my hometown, I grew up in Lancaster, California, and they have more electric buses in their public bus fleet than anywhere.
Yeah.
And of all the cities. And I was like, wow, that's fantastic. But then you think about it, you're kind of going, this is also a city that could take advantage of solar basically every day of the year.
Right. So and they don't do it.
But, well, you know, they actually have pretty big solar farms out there in the Apple Valley. So
yeah, fair enough. So let's take this back. So you're talking about Lancaster, California, and BYD is actually BYD is a Chinese company. They make these big electric buses. Yeah. They also make electric, you know, drayage trucks, semi trucks. They make terminal trucks, right? And we were talking before about how these batteries take away from cargo space. And my favorite thing, it was like subtle, but it was funny, was in the BYD display, they had their drayage truck all done up in Frito-Lay graphics, which is like, that is the ideal cargo for an electric truck, right? Because it takes up a lot of space. It weighs nothing. It's just a bag of chips that's like 75% air. Yeah. Like, you don't need a 15 liter diesel truck to pull that. You could pull that with an electric truck and it's going to be fine. Like, you're never going to go over your weight limit. It's going to
certain products. It's the joke of it's what weighs more, a pound of lead or a pound of feathers?
Well, but in this case, it's the pound of feathers, right? Because it takes up more space.
Well, no, really, it really is the case of, if you're looking at what the product is you need to haul. This is, frankly, this is where I'm curious as to how much, you know, in the trucking industry, how, from an EV perspective and the vehicles that are being developed. I mean, again, here in Portland, we have Daimler just down the road, you know, and they've been developing out a lot of this stuff for, you know, for years now. And so I would love to have a conversation with a long haul trucker or even someone who does regional stuff from like a medium duty perspective and just say, like, on a day to day, you know, how is what we're talking about meeting what you think is a practical solution for your day to day? I think medium duty can be not a slam dunk, but pretty close in a lot of ways in major metro
class market. Class 5, class 8.
But semis, where it gets to your point about the it's got the Lay's branding all over it. It's like, that's more ideal than if it's like, what are you hauling? Cinder blocks or something.
Right.
It's like, maybe not the ideal use cases.
What percentage, I mean, so those containers, I mean, that's a real art. That is like a legit engineering degree, figuring out how to package those semi trucks and get the most stuff on there. But I wonder what percentage, if we were professionals, we would have done this research. I wonder what percentage of those containers are at maximum weight capacity.
Ooh, this is where we will do a follow-up episode on this. Cause I think for those who work in that industry, and Frank, this is where we could do some digging and maybe invite someone on to you know, provide some deeper insights into that of how is that balanced out? Whether we're talking about the containers coming off of the ships, for example, or, you know, how do you then balance that against like which trucks are being used for which shipping need? Is it, again, has this been discussed in this way? Because diesel's been used for the last X amount of decades. The answer is maybe not, probably not. They just know they're going to, with this weight, they're only going to go 300 miles. Whereas with this weight, they're going to go 450.
You know, we had, speaking of people who were on the show, we had Jason Cortez a couple of weeks back, who was the Rivian charging guy.
Yeah.
And he made a really good point, which is the first filling station, not gasoline station, filling station was a kerosene station in 1905, which was like 20 years after the Benz patent motor. So we've had these chicken and egg conversations before, you know, with unleaded and leaded gas in the 70s. We've had these conversations before. It's just nobody is around right now who remembers how that went.
Well, that's unfortunate. And how well was it documented? You know, I mean,
if it was documented to the letter, to the like micron, is it actually interesting enough that anybody would have read it? Or would you look at it and go, you know what? I bet we could wing this. This will be fine.
Oh, well, the latter is certainly what's happening, I think, right now in charging is people are just kind of, you know, not digging into what we may have learned in the past just yet, based on how some of the infrastructure has been employed. But no, we got to we got to dive into that a little bit deeper. But kind of backing up to our original topic of the ACT Expo.
Yeah.
So what else was kind of like rising to the top of the conversation aside from we've talked about buses, we've talked about the trucking.
Yeah, I think it was what was really interesting was every single major player had a fully electric vehicle in their display, right?
Okay.
Which you would think makes perfect sense, but it wasn't, I mean, 2-3 years ago, there was hydrogen, there was, there was the CNG, and there was actually some really interesting stuff within the natural gas universe. Mm-hmm. I don't know that, we're electrify news, not, gasify news.
Well, but if it's gas, it's not clean.
right.
Sorry.
Fair enough. But, that kind of stuff was pretty interesting. There was some hybridization stuff going on, but one thing that I thought was really interesting was, there was a company called Lightning Motors that was doing these, essentially it was an electric crate motor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about doing, for $40,000-$50,000 per unit, they could do this conversion. And I was trying to understand why would you do that conversion, right? Like who is out there that like, when you can buy a Ford Transit electric, why would you do it? And his answer was really interesting. I wasn't expecting it. He said, but you can't. I'm like, what do you mean you can't? He goes, go online right now and try to order a Ford Lightning. If you decide you're going to order 10 Ford Lightnings today, you'll get them in 2025. I can have you running in 30 to 60 days.
It's an interesting argument. The
Well, the other thing too is that's a half ton truck. Yeah. Where his unit could go into a 3500 chassis or a 5500 chassis, and you'd have a medium duty solution right away that was making several hundred pounds of torque.
What was the size of the battery that they were offering with the conversions?
They had a couple of different ones, but I think it was like 80 kilowatt hour packs that you could do like 2 to 3 to 4 of these, depending on the size of it.
Okay. Yeah. There's an argument to be made there because again, it's a combination of factors right now with. We're relying on large-scale legacy brands to ramp up their EV production, but we also have how many millions of vehicles that are in market right now?
Yeah,
and there's a variety of companies that have been. I mean, EV Drive up here in Oregon has done conversions for cars for a long time. I know a lot of their team, and they've done some great work. But yeah, it's tough because you have to have a really obvious way to do the conversion that actually. So, for example. If you're taking a combustion engine vehicle and trying to convert it to electric, you have to think about where does the weight of the battery go? How does the motor, sit within this vehicle? It's not just pulling the old gas engine out and dropping an electric motor. It's like, where do the batteries go? Because modern EVs, the architecture of the pack is built into that subframe or part of the frame. And you don't necessarily have that with a combustion engine vehicle you're converting. It might have a tunnel for an exhaust or a transaxle, but it's not going to necessarily have the right room for batteries.
Well, that's what's interesting about these medium duty trucks is they have the saddle tanks.
Yeah.
So they have those saddle fuel tanks and they're putting battery. And it was hilarious. I was standing right there when the guy said it. I was laughing too hard to get his name, but it was so good. One guy kind of looks at it and goes, I don't know about this, man. I don't know if I'd feel comfortable having a battery there because if somebody hits it, there might be a fire. And the dude, like really, the guy, it wasn't even the guy at the booth. It was the guy he was with like kind of gave him that like slow look and goes, what do you think would happen if they hit the gas tank?
Right.
And you could like, gas is pretty flammable. Right. And like, I just started laughing. And by the time I recovered, he had already walked away, but like, which is probably better. He was probably going to beat me up because I was laughing like in his face. It was not my finest moment.
It's worth laughing at. I mean, and that's part of the information or misinformation that is out there constantly about what this industry offers, even in that conversation of conversion, you know?
Yeah.
No, I think there's, to the point that the gentleman, what was the company that's doing the conversions?
Lightning Motors.
Yeah. That's a great point to say, look, there are vehicles out there that you can take advantage of that exist in market right now that we can convert in, as he said, like 30 days, 60 days, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And then from a cost perspective, you know, is it in the same ballpark of what you might be looking at from some of these new vehicles coming out from Ford or whoever? Yep. And if it is, and you can pencil it, and you can, instead of waiting, you know, 18 months, you can get done in two, that's a solid argument to be made to anybody who's operating a fleet or somebody
Somebody who has a three-year-old or a five-year-old, a municipality that has a four or five-year-old vehicle that has already been on the road, has already been written down and amortized and everything else, they can take it off the road for 10 to 15 days and have a brand new drivetrain on the road.
That would be another deeper, more conversation to have. That'd be a lot of fun because, and at the end of the day, you know, we've got industry and then we've got consumers. And this is a lot of what we talk about today is purely industry focused for what businesses and companies and municipalities
but
are
needing. But that's a big part of it. I mean, you and I can go buy, you know, one or two cars every couple of years. But if you're talking about who is out there buying 20, 30, 50, 100, you're talking about U-Haul, Penske trucks, municipalities, port authorities, you know, police stations. Those guys are buying electric vehicles in droves or diesel vehicles, whatever vehicle it is. So if we can get those guys on the electrification bandwagon, I think that's going to be huge.
Oh, and that's a big direction of where things are going. And a lot of the people that I've worked with over the years from the utility side, they still see fleet and medium duty trucking as such. That is like the opportunity there is so simple. These vehicles, as the conversation today started, these vehicles have a set place they go every night. They have a set route they use almost every single day. We know we can go to almost the exact mile for how much distance these things drive on average. It is very easy to make that case to argue you can make the switch to fast forward to what we were just talking about with Lightning Motors is then you have the value proposition of, do you want to wait another 18 months, maybe 2 years for the right vehicle to be able to be purchased? Or, hey, you can do this conversion right now with dollars you have today, with vehicles you have today.
With grant dollars have today, with state money, with federal money, you can make that conversion today and start taking advantage of it. And I think it's, I don't know. I like to see it, you know, from the point of view of just, we've been in this long enough and we're believers in the technology, but I really think the thing that got me was, you know, at that corner gas station that had the hydrogen filling station, diesel was $6.86 a gallon.
Wow.
Yeah. So like, you got to be looking at that. I mean, if you were planning and budgeting out your fleet 18 months ago, 12 months ago, that was not what you planned fuel to cost.
Oh God, no, no. It's, and that part of it, the discussion of fuel. And then you can talk to anybody who has a business or a location where they have not only a place to park the vehicles at night, but then how could they also leverage other opportunities for energy production? It's like, you guys have a gigantic warehouse that has nothing but like, you know, just flat roof. Cover that with solar, put in some backup batteries. If you're charging some of your vehicles during the day, you guys could also be reducing how much you're going to be spending on that electricity production because of installation of solar, all those types of details. These are things that, again, we have these conversations inside the industry on a daily basis. And the vast majority of people, whether it's business or just general consumers, they're not aware of any of this stuff. But that's why we're here.
That's why we're here. We're here to give it off. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, you know, we're coming to the end of the time contract. I think this is actually a really tight show. We're not going to have to edit too much out of it, Chris.
I was going to say, now we can go to Chris. But see what we did for you, buddy. Aside from the goat, this was pretty solid.
I think this is one of our best ones. Yeah. Well, listen, so Interesting fun fact, I was at the Long Beach Convention Center for the ACT Expo. June 3rd through 5th, that is where we're going to have the Electrify Expo, where mm-hmm. you're going to be able to ride, you know, not only some of these big trucks and, you know, check out some of the electric cars that are out there, but also e-mobility, e-bikes, e-skateboards. I just got my demo scooter from NIU, from NIU, that I'm going to be doing the unboxing and the review on. So we'll cover nice. That in next week's show. And yeah, I think that's it.
I got to say, you know, it's good to be having these conversations again. It's good to know that there's the opportunity to go to these types of events more again. I think the cool thing right now, though, is even just rewind a year ago, talking about what we're doing with Electrify Expo and what it was bringing to, you know, just only three cities around the U.S. and this year being five, is that things are clearly ramping up.
Yeah. And not only being five, but Long Beach is almost sold out.
Oh, well,
we're not going to be allowed to have more people. that's not even an exaggeration. We're now 40% higher in pre-show than they were the entire first day.
Wow.
I know, it's a big show. And you're not gonna go.
Like every human needed to get some time to just also just spend time.
You take one vacation every 5 years, literally, and you're getting heat for it.
And I'm getting grief. But you know, hey, I will see everybody at the other four events.
There you go, man.
Be a party. So.
All right, brother. Well, listen, always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Electrify News Podcast, brought to you by the Electrify Expo, coming to five major cities in 2022. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for all the latest in e-mobility news and updates.